ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Param Mahimna Uru Vikramato Vinato Ya Partivani Vimame Sarajamsi Martya Kim Jayamana Bhuta Jata Upaiti Martya Ityaha Mantra Drig Rishif Purushasya Yasya Param Mahimna Uru Vikramato Grinano Yaparthivani Vimame Sarajamsi Martya Kimchayamana Uta Jata Upaiti Martya Ityaha Mantra Digrishif Purushasya Yasya Param, the measurement, Mahimna, of the glories, Uru Vikramataha, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead,
who acts wonderfully,
Grinanaha, can count.
A person who
Partivani
of the whole planet Earth
Vimame
can count.
Saha
he
Rajagamsi
the
atoms
Martya
a human being
who is subject to death
Kim, what?
Jayamana
who will take birth in the future
Uta.
Either. Jataha.
One who is already born.
Upaiti.
Can do.
Martya.
A person subject to death.
Iti.
Thus.
Aha.
Said.
Mantradrik.
Who could foresee the Vedic mantras?
Rishihi.
The great saintly Vasishtha Muni.
Purushasya.
Of the Supreme Person.
Yasya.
Of whom?
Translation. Lord Vishnu, I must nonetheless act in obedience to your order, because obeying your order is most auspicious and is the first duty of everyone. Sukadev Goswami continued, in this way the most powerful Sukracharya accepted the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead with full respect. Along with the best brahmanas, he began to compensate for the discrepancies in the sacrifices performed by Bali Maharaj. O King Parikit, thus having taken all the land of Bali Maharaj by begging, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vamanadev, delivered to his brother Indra all the land taken away by Indra's enemy. Lord Brahma, the master of King Daksha, and all other Prajapatis, accompanied by all the demigods, the great saintly persons, the inhabitants of Pitriloka, the Manus, the Munis, and such leaders as Daksha, Bhrigu, Angira, as well as Kartikeya and Lord Shiva, accepted Lord Vamana as the protector of everyone. He did this for the pleasure of Kasyapa Muni and his wife Aditi, and for the welfare of all the inhabitants of the universe, including their various local leaders. O King Parikit, Indra was considered the king of all the universe, but the demigods headed by Lord Brahma wanted Upendra, Lord Vamanadeva, as the protector of the Vedas, the principles of religion, fame, opulence, auspiciousness, vows, elevation to the higher planetary system, and liberation. Thus they accepted Upendra, Lord Vamanadeva, as the supreme master of everything. This decision made all living entities extremely happy. Thereafter, along with all the leaders of the heavenly planets, Indra, the king of heaven, placed Lord Vamanadeva before him and, with the approval of Lord Brahma, brought him to the heavenly planet in a celestial airplane. Indra, king of heaven, being protected by the arms of Vamanadeva, the supreme personality of Godhead, thus regained his rule over the three worlds and was reinstated in his own position, extremely opulent, fearless, and fully satisfied. Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Kartikeya, the great sage Bhrigu, and other saintly persons, the inhabitants of Pitri Loka, and other living entities present, including the inhabitants of Siddha Loka and living entities who travel in outer space by airplane, all glorify the uncommon activities of Lord Vamanadeva. O King, while chanting about and glorifying the Lord, they returned to their respective heavenly planets. They also praised the position of Aditi. O Maharaj Parikit, pleasure of your dynasty, I have now described to you everything about the wonderful activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vamanadeva. Those who hear about this are certainly freed from all the results of sinful activities. One who is subject to death cannot measure the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Trivikrama. Lord Vishnu, One who is subject to death cannot measure the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Trivikrama, Lord Vishnu, any more than he can count the number of atoms on the entire planet Earth. No one, whether born already or destined to take birth, is able to do this. This has been sung by the great sage Vasishta. Purport. Vasishta Muni has given a mantra about Lord Vamanadeva. Na te Vishnur jayamano na jato mahim na param anantam apa. No one can estimate the extent of the uncommonly glorious activities of Lord Vishnu. Unfortunately, there are so-called scientists who are subject to death at every moment, but are trying to understand by speculation the wonderful creation of the cosmos. This is a foolish attempt. Long, long ago, Vasishtha Muni said that no one in the past could measure the glories of the Lord, and that no one can do so in the future. One must simply be satisfied with seeing the glorious activities of the Supreme Lord's creation. The Lord therefore says in Bhagavad Gita 10:42, Vishta Bhyaham Imam Krishnam Ekam Shena Stito Jagata. With a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support this entire universe. The material world consists of innumerable universes, each one full of innumerable planets, which are all considered to be products of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's material energy. Yet, this is only one-fourth of God's creation. The other three-fourths of creation constitute the spiritual world. Among the innumerable planets in only one universe, the so-called scientists cannot understand even the moon and Mars, but they try to defy the creation of the Supreme Lord and His uncommon energy. Such men have been described as crazy. Nunam pramata kurute vipadama, Bhagavatam 5:54. Such crazy men unnecessarily waste time, energy, and money in attempting to defy the glorious activities of Urukrama, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the demigods, because of their understanding of the position of the Lord, then they were very happy and willing to accept Him as the Lord of everything, the Lord of all the sacrifices, the Lord of whatever may be happening in the universe. All the important things of Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha, all the different heads of the different planets, beings that are important, Indra and the demigods, the Pitris, the forefathers, the Manus, who then take care of all the, regulate or give direction to mankind. Then we see the Munis, or the sages. All whoever was there, they all accepted the Supreme Lord. So when you get these categories, then you've actually gotten everyone, because that's what deals with the living entity. The demigods are supplying everything. The forefathers have arranged the situation that one is in, the family that one is in. By their grace, we have the family. Then Manu, then he establishes what is correct for the living entity, how human beings should behave so that they can therefore take part properly in this dharma, artha, kama, or moksha. And the Munis, then they give direction how to practically apply that in our life. So basically, in these, it's not arbitrary, these particular names and positions that were given. But by this, we can understand that all activities of this world, and all activity and all positions in the world that have influence, have been covered. And all these persons are accepting Vamanadeva as the Supreme. He is the shelter of all things that create prosperity in the universe. The religious principles, the sacrifice, the charity, whatever may be there, they see him as the perfection. If he is involved, whatever it is becomes perfect. But in this verse, then he is making the point, is now we've seen how the great personalities have reacted to this whole pastime of Vamanadeva. But now he mentions that those within this world who are destined to die and to take birth, these such persons, then they can never understand the glories of the Supreme Lord. So the materialists, though they may try, they may speculate, they cannot understand. They can't even understand themselves. Right? They means the greatest scientist, whoever he is not even seen the inside of his eyelid. Right? He is not seen. His places on his own body he can't see. So the whole point is how they are going to understand the whole cosmic creation, understand God. They can't even understand themselves. So this is being pointed out, that Krishna has only pervaded this universe with a small amount of his energy. Just something has been given here, just to make it work. Means the shadow has been given to the living entity to play with, but shadows can be a little boring. Means you may play with them for a short time, but after how long can you shadow box or run along on the ground and, you know, making things or make things with your hands and play with the shadow? Not so long. Therefore, Krishna has to empower by his own energies, his own opulences, then the things of this world, so that there is some interest for the living entity. Because for the living entity, only the Lord is interesting. So therefore he comes in, but in a very small way and in a covered way, that the living entity is not forced to acknowledge the Supreme Lord's presence. He can just see it that it's just the material energy. So then seeing this, then the living entity is very happy and satisfied, because the Lord is unlimited. So even if you take a small amount of unlimited, it's still unlimited. You know, just like if you have an ocean and you take a drop of water, it's still in the same nature as the whole ocean. So if you have unlimited opulence and you take a drop of unlimited, then it's still, its nature is unlimited. So therefore we see in this material world, in this unlimited manifestation of the various things of the universe. So So here this point is being made, because even in the Vedic time, is the scientists, the modern scientists, then they were always present. Those persons who think that they will, by studying the atoms of the universe, that's why he mentions here, Rajagamsu, the atoms, because scientists means they deal with atoms. They always try to get down to what's the smallest thing to figure it out. You want to take it apart. Then you can figure, like, if I want to know this book, what is this thing? You know, I've never seen a book before, and I'm a big, big scientist. So I take the book, I take one little scraping from one of the pages, I put it under my ion microscope, I, you know, crank it down, and I see all the different things, and then I separate things, and then I may take one little part of that and put that into another and see what happens. And in this way, of course, I'm going to understand the subject matter that's delineated in the book,
the meanings of it, the applications of it, everything I'm going to understand. Right? So this is the foolishness. So such foolish people have been there since time immemorial. And Vishishta Muni has given this verse, Nate Vishnur Jayamano Najato Mahimna Param Anantam Apa. No one can estimate the extent of the uncommonly glorious activities of Lord Vishnu. Unfortunately, there are so-called scientists who are subject to death at every moment, but are trying to understand by speculation the wonderful creation of the cosmos. This is a foolish attempt. So Vishishta Muni, he already has explained this at the beginning of creation, that we understand that such foolish people exist, and by this they're going to understand everything. So now, of course, one can say, no, but so much nice things have developed in this world, right? It means if it wasn't for modern science, then we wouldn't have, you know, nice airplanes and nice petrol that we could blow up buildings with, and we wouldn't have mustard gas, and, you know, so many nice things we wouldn't have. You know, we wouldn't have miniskirts, we have so many things we wouldn't have, you know, if we didn't have the scientists. So, therefore, it's important, but we can understand what is the value of this by understanding that if you took one atom from anything, what would one understand? How much could one understand? Not only that, even if one understands nicely the atom, what is the purpose of that atom? One will never know. I can take this book, analyze what paper it's made out of, where it came from, the molecular structure, the ink, you know, this funny little thing here, and the nature of it, and the mathematical combination that wove the thing and that, and then how many things are there, and where all the little bumps are, and why those bumps are at that place and not at this. I could do all this, but I still would not find out what is written in the book. So that's the thing, is since the Lord has written the manual for the universe, the Vedas, He is the shelter of these Vedas, He is the teacher of the Vedas, the knower of the Vedas. Without approaching Him, one will actually never understand the universe. Therefore, one can understand why science makes so much problem. It may look good today, but tomorrow it's not seen so good. I mean, you go back a few years, it was a great invention, you know, the aerosol spray can. And now people feel that it's not a good invention. You know, so many things like this, if you check. They've invented something very nice. And then it kills everybody. So then they figure out how to adjust it so it doesn't completely kill everybody. Then it's okay. So like this, they make these adjustments. But unfortunately, how the universe is actually supposed to run, not based on someone's speculation and how they would like things to run for their own personal sense gratification, then that they can never figure out. Science has never come up with a culture. We never hear of anybody writing a whole cultural book based on, you know, the atoms of the universe. No nuclear physicist has put forward a social structure that creates some harmony amongst people and a philosophy to back that up. And it gets, no, they don't. It's not expected. It's not expected. So that's why it's so foolish. Is that you're going to figure out the person who made something. Let's say somebody made some invention. You know, Einstein, what is it? No, who's it? Who's the guy in the light bulb?
Edison.
Okay, so Edison made the light bulb. So we take a little scraping off the light bulb and we're going to understand everything about Edison, right? We're going to understand what clothes he wears, what he likes to eat, what he does, how many children he has, what he does on Sunday, you know, what he does for fun. We'll understand everything from taking a little scraping off of his light bulb. So one can understand that even though it seems very intelligent, one can write volumes of literature about that scraping off the light bulb. But we can understand that if its purpose is to understand Edison, then it's the most foolish approach. It's a really badly applied intelligence. Super intelligence. No one can deny what great intelligence is there, and how much endeavor and thought has gone into these theories. But unfortunately, because it's misapplied. So therefore it's called Mayaya Apritigyana. So this is then being given here that therefore one should turn to the Lord, and from the Lord then see how things are supposed to function, how things are supposed to work, how the universe actually is supposed to run. Therefore it mentions all these different things that he was given. Protector of the Vedas, the principles of religion, fame, opulence, auspiciousness, vows, elevation of the higher planetary systems, and liberation. Otherwise, when these things are in the hands of those who are not in line with Vamanadeva, not in line with the Supreme Lord, we see they cause so much problem. They misrepresent the Vedas for their own sense gratification. Religion also becomes twisted to meet someone's ends, whatever they want. Right? They wanted to eat the animals. Right? They were very happy eating animals. So then what is the process? Religious process. Then they go to God and say, okay, now since you know you're part of the whole scene here, we understand that you've created all these animals and created us, this, that. So then since you know we want these animals and we want to eat them, so naturally, you know, because you're the big boss here, you should get a share of this. So which share do you want? Right? The question wasn't whether we should offer this or not. Do you want a share of this? Which share do you want? Right? You want the blood or you want the meat? Right? You know, the opportunities, you know, it means they're, you know, could have put it so many other ways. You want the right half or left half, or upper half or lower half, or so many ways, but whatever. And so then, you know, being asked such a, you know, wonderful question, you know, how you say, ask a stupid question, you get a stupid answer. So then he says, okay, I'll take all the blood. You can't have one drop of it. You know? So therefore, we understand this, you cannot get, means if you took all the blood out of the meat, you would have a dry powder. Right? So, but we don't see anybody overly, you know, worried about this. You know, they'll do their best to give God what he wants. So we can see is that religion just gets adjusted for one's own purposes. You have a purpose. You want that purpose. Then God has to come up with some way that you can do it without annoying everybody. Right? They slow you down a little bit. You know? Like that. Same with fame. People are famous, and then what do they do with their fame? They use it to, you know, bring forth all kinds of foolish philosophies of their own, foolish lifestyles. And in this way, then, they lead the society to hell. Opulence, that's misused. That opulence is supposed to be for sense gratification, not for religious purposes. Auspiciousness, if something's auspicious, then I should get a material result that I can enjoy my senses with. Like that, vows, they take the very strict vow that I will, you know, I will walk down the, Prabhupada gives this example, walk down the cold, freezing street with my, you know, stiletto shoes and miniskirt, though it's freezing out, but I do this vow to be able to, you know, warm up all the residents who happen to be walking down the street. You know, great vows like this. Elevation to heavenly planets, otherwise people go there and just, you know, just to, only for enjoyment, so unless there is something kept in line, and liberation. The impersonalists, they take liberation and misconstrue it, that we become God, rather than God is already God. So these aspects then have been given by the previous acharyas already, because the universe is not new. Even though it just opened, and then Vishishta makes these points, but the point is it was, you know, just 3/4 of a second of Mahavishnu. It was the previous manifestation of the universe. So nothing new. So it's constantly this aspect is going on. So here he kindly points out that which is connected to Vishnu is very, very nice and makes everything perfect. And that which is not, then it doesn't have really any meaning. It's useless. Yeah. I said, crazy men unnecessarily waste time, energy, and money in attempting to defy the glorious activities of Guru Krama. Any questions or comments? Or... Pretty boring, huh? Yeah.
You're mentioning that when the material is created, then there's nothing attractive in it, and Krishna has to empower it so we become attracted to it. So I wonder how much we meditate upon these different energies and different aspects of this material.
Oh, how much we are meditating?
Yeah.
Fully. Yeah. Means otherwise, why you have a dog, right? Dogs aren't so attractive, you know? But something becomes attractive. They're small, then a dog, dirty, filthy, stinky, but they're cute. You get a baby donkey, they're cute. You know, anything, even a baby snake is cute. Right? Because they've been empowered to attract the mind of the, you know, adult class, to give them shelter, give them protection and that. Because when they have that mood, then you think, yes, I am the protector, I am the, you know, I can take care, I will provide, I will guide, I will, you know, like this. So one can feel those things. You know, you look at something, you like one room you like, another room you don't like. It's all the energies. You like, you're attracted to a particular energy, another one you're not. Someone's a very tamasic room, they think this is great. Someone else is very sattvic, they think this is terrible. So it all depends upon the individual. So all we're actually dealing with is energies. That's all we're dealing with. There is what we'd call, we think of energy as something, you know, not of substance. But everything, this is all energy, you know. Even modern scientists will say that it's all little molecules that are all moving, you know, so it's quite amazing that we're able to stand on it and all that, because it's all just energy, that's it. Substance, as we think, the gross, it's not there. It's just grosser of the energy and subtler of the energy, it's all energy. So all we're doing is we're energy, energy is attracted to energy. Like that, it's the natural thing. One is like that. So the living entity is energy, so opulence, so they're attracted to opulence. They're attracted by Krishna's opulence. But they're most attracted to him because he's the source of all opulence. It means unlimited opulence is in him. Right? Others have great opulence, but Krishna has unlimited, therefore he's the most attractive.
Say this particular opulence which we perceive here is a manifestation of the material world, and then there's another opulence in the spiritual world. So how do we connect this?
How do we connect? We have to give up our attraction for that what is here, at least intellectually. We have to intellectually understand that the opulence we're attracted to here is actually, it's not, there's no substance in it for us, because we see it in the form of something. You know, like we have a car, we're attracted to that car. But that's while it's in fashion. As soon as another car comes out, then we lose that attraction. It's the same car. The same tin can, the same rubber, the same, you know, whatever plastic it's made out. It's the same, nothing changed. But because our interest in which energy we are attracted to has changed, therefore this is unattractive. So that means is that attraction repulsion that can be intellectually established. Though there may be the mind is still attractive, but the intelligence can understand this is not good, or it's not important, or its only use is that, like here, the only use is in its connection to Krishna. You connect it to Krishna, then it's worthwhile. It's not connected, then it's not worthwhile. So how does Krishna want it connected to him? Because sambandha means relationship. So I can say, well, I'm going to take the, you know, the cream pie and put it in Krishna's face. You know, because, you know, there's face and there's cream pie, they go well together. You know, but that may not be how Krishna wants it put together. He may want the cream pie and your face. You know. So one has to see is relationships are established by God, not by us. We haven't dreamt up a new relationship, right? There's still only conjugal, parental, friendship, servitorship and shanta or neutrality. As far as main relationship, there's not another relationship. No one's even trying to think of another one. Everybody's very happy with these. You know, and then within this, your fear, your happiness, all these different things. The secondary. But in these main, no one's thinking of something different. You know? They're not thinking. It's just different approaches to the same thing, different angles. So we just simply have to acknowledge that relationships are created by Krishna. So if we see we have an attachment for one thing, then we have to connect it to Krishna. How would Krishna want this thing to be connected to Him? Right? Then it becomes our attachment to it becomes purified, because we acknowledge Krishna's energy, we acknowledge a connection with Krishna, and we acknowledge, because then there's Krishna, the thing, or the material energy, in us. So that's sambandha, that's knowledge. When we can see us, the material energy, and Krishna, what's the relationship, then we have knowledge. Even whatever it is, even if it's the most sentimental, emotional thing, we are very attracted and attached to our child. But that child that we're attached to is made out of material energy. We're not attached to the soul. There's so many souls walking around, we don't care. You know, that mosquito that just came and bit you, you didn't worry about its soul, you just squash, you know. Like that. So we're attracted to that because Krishna's empowered it. He's made the kids nice, attractive, this, that, you know, and then anything that's expanded from something else is naturally attracted to its source. Whatever expanded, you're attracted to that because it's expanded from you. It's your kid. And so, therefore, you're very attractive. So, therefore, now you have material energy, this gross and subtle body of this kid. You have yourself, and you have the Lord. How are you going to put the three together? Do we speculate? We make it up? You know, we read books written by guys with pointed ears? You know? How do we figure it out? Right? So, we have to figure out that what does Krishna say? How does He want us to deal in this? So He wants us to train the children about Him and deal with them, protect them, take care. But how He says to take care. We don't protect how we want to take care, but how Krishna says. Because the body is Krishna's. That mind, the intelligence and all is Krishna's. Right? You know, we're focusing on that because that's the root of our attachment, our attraction. But we have to understand is that that potency is there as Krishna's. That's what we're attracted to. Like that. You know? And then, like that. So then, but if we take it further, then we see, well, who am I? What is mine? You know, then it's not that I am this body, you know, okay, the kid's not his, but I'm also not mine. So therefore, how does this body, and gross and subtle body, deal with that gross and subtle body on a parental platform in connection with Krishna? Then you start becoming very conscious of everything in your life and seeing everything connected to Krishna. Right? Plus, then everything is done very nicely. Means, and the point is, the material world, nothing will ever go perfect. You can't get the perfect situation, the perfect this, perfect that. You can get close, because the closer you get to Krishna's directions, the better it is. But ultimately, it's the connection of that, that of us and the things of our attachments and endeavors to Krishna that makes things perfect. That's what makes it perfect. So that's the point that's being made in this chapter. Is whatever endeavor we do, whatever our desires, whatever our needs, if they're connected to Krishna in some way, then it becomes very nice. Then it becomes, you know, wonderful. Because then Krishna is involved. And without, then there's no real benefit or purpose. Does that make sense? Anything else, sir?